Welcome to Hometown Glory, your Spurs and Culture podcast. I'm Rosa, and today I'm blessed to be in the presence of Billy, Lauren, and Sam. Hello, guys. How are you doing? Billy, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. Very, very good. Thank you. Just got back from Disneyland. So,
very nice.
Yeah. Well, hey.
We'll save that for the cultural highlights at the end of the pod.
Disney away. Yeah.
Lauren, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all good. I have not been to Disneyland, but apart from that, I am as well as you can be on a Monday. Obviously, it's today that we're recording. So, but yeah, all good.
Yeah, it's a pretty good Monday to be Spurs. Sam, how are you feeling?
Very, very good. 3 points here.
Yeah,
feels nice. Makes Mondays so much easier.
It really does. It really does. I didn't even have to like see anybody today, but it felt good. Another day, another inexplicably inconsistent first half performance, followed by a barnstorming-ish second half fight back from our Lily Whites. We'll be pondering the complexities of our performance against Forest, looking forward to the scene of more than one crime, Newcastle away, and dishing out our latest culture picks. Where to start? Maybe with a pretty great first 20 minutes. Sam, how were you feeling initially?
Yeah, we've been begging for the team to come out of the blocks fast for weeks now, and I think that was probably the best showing of it in quite a long time. Pressed them high and created a couple of opportunities and scored a great own goal. Now the top own goalers in the league.
I was wondering that actually.
Yeah, so we can be proud of that. But yeah, it was... it's just really nice to see us come out of the box fast. I thought Bissouma looked really good in that first period before we scored the goal. Moving the ball around much, much quicker than we saw at West Ham. So yeah, it was just nice to see us on the front foot again and looking back to sort of old early season Tottenham. And then, yeah, got the goal and sort of, I'm sure we'll discuss now what happened afterwards.
What did happen afterwards? Billy, do you want to talk us through it?
Yeah, we got outplayed by Nuno for like 20 minutes, which is pretty as embarrassing as it gets, right? But yeah, just after the goal, it's pretty dominant period from Forest and just a really annoying goal to concede, I think. But yeah, I was really happy the way we started. And then I thought this might be a turning point for us. We might go and blow a team away in the first half. And then suddenly Forest just got back into it.
I was feeling like so good. I know that loads of people go into these games thinking, I just want to see us like absolutely slap somebody. And I never go into games like that. I'm just like, I just want to win. But I was feeling like, I think it looked like it was on. And then it very much was not. Now, this is a sort of point of contention because I've already had this conversation with friend of the pod, Jack. And he, on his pod, claimed that we were outplayed. And I basically said, don't be ridiculous. But it seems like you think we were outplayed. So, Lauren, I'm going to go to you.
I don't know if we were outplayed. I think they just had a good spell. They had a good spell as well.
They did. They had a good spell. All right, I'll accept that. Lauren, how did it look from your perspective?
Yeah, I think the same, really. I thought, oh, my God, yes, finally. We've made a really, really good start. It just felt like we were in complete control. And then we just conceded a goal. And it was like,
that's pretty much how it felt as well.
It was just like, because, I don't know, it's just another one of those where, once again, the opposition did not have to work hard to score against us. Destiny just was like, oh, I'm not going to track my runner. Oh, well. Goal goes in. And then it just felt like we were rattled. And I think, yeah, Forest got on top of us and they were creating better chances. And I don't know whether outplayed, but like, we just lost our way. And then to be honest, by the time we were getting to halftime, we were clinging on and like shout out to Vic because without him, we would have been losing going in at halftime. And it just felt really abnormal, because I feel like some of our first half performances we've been crap for the whole half, but this one was like, oh, actually no, like we've come flying out the blocks, we've got energy, West Ham hasn't tired us out. And then it was just like, oh, okay, yeah, it was just really frustrating, I think, of a first half based on how well we started and how poorly we finished it.
Can anyone point to like any reasons why it would be the case, given that we started strongly, why we would suddenly drop off? I feel like I'm looking for reasons and I can't really find them. It's like it just suddenly happens without sort of advance warning. And I don't know if it's just that we drop off or suddenly the kind of opposition gets organized again and they push us back and then we have to reorganize ourselves. Is it purely something that we're doing to ourselves or we allow the opposition to do to us? Sam, have you got any thoughts?
I think it's hard to put your finger on it, but it does really feel like a bit of a reoccurring pattern, unfortunately.
Please try, because it's driving me mad.
I mean, I don't have any like bang on answers, unfortunately, but I think we've just been like sloppiness creeps in. I know that seemed like a really simplified, dumbed down answer of what's actually happening, but I think we've just seen over the last couple of weeks where, you know, the tempo drops off and it all of a sudden becomes easy for the opposition to have a bit of structure about them. We're not shifting them across the park quick enough. And I guess, yeah, in contrast to that, when Højbjerg and Bentancur came on in the second half, shifting the ball side to side so quickly, you know, we might not be playing vertically quick as, you know, like rushing forward with the ball, but we're actually moving the side, you know, horizontally across the pitch. And when you're sitting in a low block as a back four or five, really not like tightly compressed, if they're not being asked to move like West Ham weren't the other night and they're just able to stand still, we're making life really easy for them. But I think, and back to my point, the problem with what we're doing is that, yeah, but the likes of Bissouma, I think we're just slowing us down too much, too many touches, too many wayward passes, and then putting us in trouble and sort of inviting the counterattack on. And yeah, maybe Poro and your doggy haven't been playing their best football lately. And when they're pushing up the park, trying to get us forward, and then all of a sudden we're defending a counterattack with, you know, one of the quickest players in the world, but it's still 2v3 or... these kind of situations keep occurring. That's why I think it feels like a bit of a hot knife through butter at times, because we're outnumbered on the counterattack, and it's almost like when it's our playmaker or number six that's the person that's giving the ball away, they're almost like the last line of defense in the midfield. So it just ends up being two center backs versus the oncoming counterattack. And I thought, you know, Anthony Elanga is not somebody that you really want to be defending too many counterattacks. That's exactly the kind of player he is and how he loves to score goals. So that is my TED talk about what's going on at the moment.
I like it. It didn't give me like the exact explanation that I wanted, but it makes perfect sense. I just still don't get why there's that sudden moment. And I do, and maybe just to sort of pause for a moment and to say that I think Saar and Bissouma were sort of struggling eventually by the end of the first half. And I think they were both fasting. So that can't have helped, to be honest.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, Sam, I agree with you. It's the midfield. And I think if your midfield are not at it, you cannot defend transitions and you cannot play forward or side to side quickly. And I think, you know, we are where we are. Like, Saar and Bissouma are fasting. I have no idea. Like, please, I don't know how they do that. So in terms of actually being able to perform at that level, you know, they are incredible to be able to get themselves out on that pitch. But
this is it, to be clear. Like, yeah, like if 45 minutes is all you can expect, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. And especially for someone like Saar, because he relies so much on his engine to get around that pitch and to be on there probably not drinking any water or anything, like that's just not easy for anyone to do, like, even a professional athlete. So I'm not going to be overly critical in terms of their energy levels. However, you know, I was surprised that Ange described Bissouma as outstanding on Tuesday, because I was like, oh, I don't know, we're watching different games. And I just think if we've got somebody that's playing in that six that's not reading danger, and I don't think he reads danger enough, I don't think he stops the counter-attack, and when he's dilly-dallying, taking extra touches on the ball, I think it just kills us forwards and backwards. So I think we noticed and we saw the difference in the changes that we made in midfield, because suddenly we got control of the game back again. It is such a critical area. If we don't have I just think in modern football, if you don't have control in midfield, doesn't matter how good your strikers are, you're asking your defenders to do way too much. And on Destiny and Pedro, I don't mind if they go forward. I think our system is fantastic and play number 10s, but it's your responsibility to get back, because you are fullbacks. And when they decide that they're not going to do that, or they're going to switch off, we cannot ask Mickey with his hamstrings to make those recovery runs, or Vicario to make super saves all of the time, because it will just catch us out. And it has been far too often recently. And that's the end of my TED talk.
No arguments here, but you have answered a question that I didn't ask, but that I'm just going to ask anyway, because I wasn't sure. I think we can sort of move on now from the negativity, you know, and all the bad stuff that happened. But because we were so different immediately after the break, but I wasn't sure whether that was just because we just kind of decided to start playing football properly again, or whether it very much was those specific substitutions in Pierre and Bentancur. What do you think, Bill? I mean, it seems, Lauren, you very much think it was to do with the actual personnel as opposed to just a sort of general energy boost. What's your take on it, Bill?
Yeah, I think Lauren is exactly right, and that Bissouma is not good off the ball as a six. He's not good defensively, and Højbjerg is exactly that. Obviously they have completely different traits, but Bissouma is probably a lot better with the ball than Højbjerg. But Forest are very physical in midfield. They've got like Gibbs White and a few other players, and Yates, very, very physical in midfield, and I think we just weren't coping with it. And then I thought, as soon as we brought Højbjerg on, he was getting stuck in, winning tackles, you know, making interception and blocks a lot more than Bissouma. I think that really, really helped. And I think the other midfield question that we have all the time is Saar or Bentancur, and they're again two completely different players. And I think our passing is really poor in the first half, the stretches, and I think Bentancur is a much better passer than Saar. He certainly can't get up and down the pitch as much as Saar can. He's not as good on like transitions as Saar, and he's not as good as, you know, like running with the ball as Saar is. He's a different kind of dribbler, but his passing is a lot better, and I think we missed both of those qualities in the first half, and as soon as they came on, it completely changed the game.
It's so interesting having these four midfielders who all bring sort of completely different skill sets and different energy, because I love watching Saar so much, but he definitely was relying a lot on the fact that he's got really long legs to get him out of trouble. And he relies on that anyway, and that's totally fine, but it was really noticeable yesterday. And it seems clear to me now, because I think we've been sort of thinking that it could be a Bentancur Saar midfield at some point, but it seems like that's not what Ange is into, and it is very much a sort of Saar for Bissouma situation, Saar for Bentancur situation.
Yeah, because I think that's why against West Ham I wanted Højbjerg to play, because I just feel like he sees his number six as Bissouma or Højbjerg, and then his number eight, so mm-hmm. kind of
like someone who can properly screen the defence, basically, yeah. which isn't what Bentancur does, like as amazing as
To be fair, I do think he can play there, because he played there for Juventus. So I do think he's got the capabilities of doing it, but I just think it's what Ange wants. I think the one thing I also think is the difference when Højbjerg and Bentancur are on the pitch, calm heads. Mm-hmm. And I just think they don't panic as much. I think that was a noticeable difference as well. Just actually people that understood the nature of the game that they were playing in. And then also when Bentancur's on the ball, you know, he can dribble his way out of trouble. He doesn't panic. So I just think it, in terms of they were the personnel, I think, that we needed to switch to. But it's not easy because I think they're all midfielders that were recruited under different managers to play different styles. And now we have got, it, you know, it's kind of like a positive in terms of we've got different profiles depending on the game. But equally, I don't think any of them are particular, like maybe are not in the exact mold that Ange wants, but that's not his fault because they were all here before he arrived.
Yeah, but do you think that matters? I don't know. I feel sort of, because especially with these conversations that we keep having about Højbjerg, and it's very much, it feels like, obviously some of the fan base just don't like him and they can't wait till he leaves. But I feel like all of us on this pod do like him and would like him to stay. But the issue is, does he want to stay? Because he's not going to be a starter. He's not going to get the sort of game time that he wants. But I sort of feel like with the evolution of this team, like, actually, he could get plenty of game time, and it's not really about a first 11 anymore. It's more about your first, like, 15 or 16. Sam, do you want to talk to me more about your Danish prince?
Yeah. I was just so happy for him yesterday because I think he's done terrifically well coming off the bench the last month or so. Like, his little cameo against Villa, albeit against 10 men, was just like having Maradona in the middle of the park. And then just a couple of those turns are insane.
You've been waiting to say that, haven't you?
Yeah. I think about it all the time. Just that little shimmy that you did in the middle of the park. It's just phenomenal. Didn't know he had hips like that.
Almost, neither did he.
Yeah. And then just again last night, I was just blown away by, like, I know we've seen that player before, but I was just really happy because he's obviously had a hard time. He's spoken quite openly about how challenging he's found it, sort of, yeah, not being the guy. He was Conte's man. He was first name on the team sheet every week. And then he's now, you know, been just hoping for 10 minutes to see out a game most of the time. If we're losing, he's not coming on, or, you know, he's coming on the last, yeah, sort of 5 minutes or an out of time. But yeah, he did terrifically well last night. And I think that there's definitely a place for him in the side. I think it was just nice to see the best of him, the best bits, and how it actually does translate into an Ange team when we're needing to play more direct football and to sort of change the tempo and get the team moving. I know it's probably not what Ange likes to see, but like, he played a couple of those like diagonals over the top from midfield, and they weren't like speculative long balls or anything, but it literally was just shifting the play nice and quick and giving us some width. And we missed that. It's all been too slow and a little bit too, sort of safe, sort of 90 degree balls along the, from Bissouma to center backs. And I know that there's that crazy stat that he's always got, which, like, he plays the most progressive passes, but you could see that last night, that he really was moving the ball forward and shooting as well, which was nice every time
I
got
love
the ball
that,
in the edge of the
man.
Area.
Yeah.
Shoot. which I really enjoyed. But I guess to answer the question, that he's definitely a guy that probably sees himself as someone that should be playing 90 minutes full stop every week. And I think he's 100% a good enough player to do that for most clubs in the world. It's just a shame that we've gone from, yeah, Conte's football, where he was exactly that, to the club that we are now, which is maybe not where he's going to be seeing 90 minutes every week. But I totally agree with you, and I know we're all on the same page that we hope that he stays, because cameos like last night and, yeah, those 20 minutes here or there when we need an adult to come on and see out the game is exactly what we need him for.
I think players just need to stop letting narratives get to their heads. I think it doesn't matter if you're a starter or not, basically. I think he should just let that idea go and be like, you can be a fully integrated member of a squad. Billy, you're nodding vehemently.
Yeah, and I think especially, like, Man City don't get this problem. Like, there seems to be an obsession with our sort of fan base a lot in particular, and even our players as well. Like, when you play for a club like Man City, you're not going to start every game. Like, we see them have Grealish on the bench, Doku on the bench, like Bernardo Silva on the bench. And it's just part of, like, being an elite club. You just have to be, you're going to be rotated. And I think all the midfielders that we've mentioned, especially if we get into Europe next year, which, you know, we'd have to really mess up not to do that now, are going to be playing a lot more. So I just think we have to sort of get used to that. And I think the players do too.
Now, Billy, talk to me about a player who is just happy to be doing whatever he can to help the club, to play his part. Obviously, I'm talking about our little gnocchi, Timo Werner.
Yeah, I thought he was, I thought, other than Van de Ven, who was obviously man of the match, I thought he was one of our best players. He's just like so consistently a threat throughout the game and it doesn't always come off. And in fact, you could probably argue that it doesn't come off more times than it does come off. But when it comes off, it often needs to go. And like a good chunk of our goals recently have been through Werner. I don't know the exact stats, but like seems like pretty much, in the last 3-4 games, he's been had goal involvements in all of them. And he's just like a constant threat on the left. And I think he's been a really effective loan for us. And I think I would certainly make it permanent. And I would hope that we get another winger as well. But I think, yeah, I'm just really, really pleased with him. And I think that ball into the box that he played in the second half, which we should have scored from, was just as good as the one that we did score from. So yeah, every game he's got these danger moments in him.
There's even that one in the first half as well that Brennan should have scored from as well, right?
Mm-hmm. I just can't believe that that's like still a debate on social media, like whether to sign him or not. I just, Lauren, do you have anything to say about this?
Looking really skeptical.
So I've baited you for that.
You got to see this guy on Twitter. I'm not going to signpost their account because they're an absolute one of the worst people on Twitter, but they've made this like say no to Timo protest banner.
Which, okay, I'm not personally an extremist
with emojis and everything. Liberal. There, it's just, I mean, I can't believe it. Like,
can you send that to me, please?
Yeah, I will. I'll put it in the group.
That's going a bit too far. Like, my position on Timo has been I need end product. We are getting end product. If we get end product between now and the end of the season, then I think, you know, he's worth the money. But like my jury's still out, but I was very pleased with how he played yesterday. It feels like our only pattern of play at the moment is just to get the ball to Bynum and play it across. Yeah. But he's very effective at doing that. And it's working with Brennan. The only thing that concerns me is like, okay, guys, because the other players like Kulusevski, they can't do that. So we are losing our other patterns of play. But yeah, he was really effective at what he did. And I like his mentality because he just keeps going. And going and going and going. And yeah, it feels like every game that he plays, he's kind of understanding the tactical instruction a little bit better. So like, he's on an upwards trajectory. I wouldn't say I'd buy him right now, but it was a straight no.
Seven games.
It was a straight no before, and it's now a pending. So, you know, we're moving in the right direction.
There's so much progress. I love
it. Lauren's watching and she's listening.
Don't say no to Timo protest just yet.
And he's spoken about how he thinks his understanding with Brennan is getting a lot better as well. And I think you can see that, although I do think Brennan was largely invisible on Sunday, personally. Don't know if anybody wants to contradict me.
Yeah, no, he didn't.
That's not a problem because he's really young. He's going to have those games. But
yeah, like Lauren says, a lot of that's basically our play, isn't it? You go to Johnson, you go to Werner, they beat them and they cut back. And I think, I don't know, it was maybe just the fact that Werner was doing so well that we just didn't look for Johnson as much, maybe, and just didn't really have much of an impact on the game at all.
I think he contributed a lot more defensively. Like, there's a few really big, just sort of track back runs and tackles that he made.
Which Werner does not really do either. Yeah,
he does not track back.
Hold up. I've seen him do it at least once.
Once. Yeah.
Yeah, I also don't think it's not easy for Brennan, I think, also playing against his boyhood club. So I think there's also a case of when you try too hard to impress, because they booed him early on as well, which is probably just not what he was expecting, bless him. But I think, you know, if someone's performing at a 5 or a 6 out of 10, but someone on the other side's performing at an 8 or a 9, then it will do as long as it kind of wins us the game. They are young players. They're not going to play their best football every single time, so we can't expect them to. But yeah, he did okay, but he's done better in other games, and I'm sure he'll hopefully have a good performance at St James's Park. So
yeah, if it's one on one off, actually no, he can have another stinker against Newcastle as long as he turns on the week after, totally fine. Who wants to talk about Mickey van de Ven? Because what an incredible day he had.
Can I just go straight to Sam, because that's probably my favourite photo of the year that you've done, Sam. That was unbelievable,
is
man.
It?
That's such a good photo. I fucking love that photo.
Billy, Billy, just text description for us, please.
Yeah.
Tell us.
So, like, obviously, the goal was incredible in itself. And, like, seeing it live is incredible because you've got a sort of feel for how fast that ball was, which makes me ask you, Sam, how the hell did you manage to capture that moment? Because that ball must have traveled at like the speed of light, pretty much. So how the hell did you even have the camera in your hand to do that? Like, well, how did you know that was coming?
I was just in like perfect position yesterday. It was really nice because I knew there was a few spares going, just because of the ridiculous kickoff time that we're playing on a Sunday. So I wandered down to the safe standing, where my season ticket isn't usually, but I stood down there. And yeah, like perfect position, and yeah, it's like you kind of get lucky with some, and it kind of got lucky with it. So just yeah, when you can sort of see something happening, you point the camera at it, focus, and the camera is all dialed in to with all the shutter speed and the ISO and everything, and yeah, just that hold down. Basically, it's set on a burst mode, so it sort of captures 8 pictures every second.
Can I ask the opposite question of that then? So do you have like this in a match, do you have like loads of photos which you are just nothing, like they're kind of just like where that hasn't happened? Do you just have
I can't begin to tell you how much admin this,
like
this is.
The stadium,
I'd like to see the worst photo you take every game, actually.
Yeah, can we get bloopers, please? So
I had the most boring job lately because my hard drive basically exploded because there's like 1,000 pictures each game. So like I'm trying to get better at taking less, and but it's all
you're
part
basically
of the process,
like a parent
right?
With their new baby. Yeah. It's like every second captured. No, that wasn't me. That's not a confession.
And yeah, so I've just like gone through deleting just thousands of crap pictures, but yeah, there's a lot of not so good ones. But yeah, it's in moments like that, you know that you're going to capture a few shit ones, but then when the good one happens, you hope that you've got it. But yeah, it was really nice to capture it. And yeah, he's actually he shared a video tonight and he's used the picture as his cover photo.
No way.
But he's yet to credit me.
Oh, Mickey.
So yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna go and at you. He could
redeem himself here. He could redeem himself here. I've spoken to him.
We know you're a nice boy.
We'll see what happens.
Seriously.
No, it's a fantastic shot. I was literally like this morning singing na 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 Mickey Van Der Ven, Mickey Van Der Ven. Thank you, Sam, for like
a little pop
the first. Yeah, literally to relive.
That's my pleasure. I was lucky to be there. It was yeah, such a wicked goal, and yeah, stoked I could capture it.
Such an amazing goal, like Billy. It must have felt from where you sit like it was just coming right at you.
Yeah, it really did, and I actually. I couldn't really see it. Like it moved that fast. I couldn't really see it. And just saw the back of the net going, everyone go crazy. It was really surreal.
There's an amazing video that somebody has shot on an iPhone. That's probably in like row 3. And there is a lady that is stood in front and he's literally taking the video on the right-hand side of the goal where the ball comes. And it's literally just like absolutely missiling for his face, and you see the lady in front of him just duck out of the way.
Incredible.
Hit the back of the net and everyone just goes mental. It's so good. It's so good.
It's such a good shot. I can't like I'm not surprised he scored it, but just the way he took it was just emphatic, as they like to say. I don't even feel like that was my favorite Mickey moment of the game, though. There's a great moment where he like obviously wins a race with I can't remember whichever Forest player it is. And we all know he's going to do it.
Is it Hudson-Odoi?
Is it Hudson-Odoi? Yeah.
He was a very fast player as well.
Yeah, but we all know that Mickey's going to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then everyone cheered when he got the ball. So good. Such a good moment. Player of the match for everybody, I guess, Mickey?
Yeah. I do want to shout Romero, though, who I did think was... Obviously, when Mickey Van Der Ven has a game like that, everyone's like, oh, he's by far our best centre-back. I don't think that he's by far our best centre-back. I thought Romero was excellent yesterday as well. He just does a lot of the things that aren't as like cool as Mickey Van Der Ven. He's like, there's a lot of the less cool work where he's not running like 500 yards against the striker and beating them. So, but I thought he was really good yesterday too.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel sorry for them. I feel like they deserve more clean sheets than they're getting because they're actually a fantastic pairing. I think they complement each other really well and they just keep conceding silly goals. But yeah, I think they both had great games yesterday.
Yeah, none of it's their fault. It's never really, like them
really
or Vic.
Good goalkeeper and two really good centre backs, and we can't keep a clean sheet. It's really weird.
It's just insane. Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah.
That Vicario double save, though, I feel like needs a chat. That's probably one of the best saves I've ever seen in my life, like live in a football ground, because it was one of those moments where, like when you're right in front of it and you're like, that's a fucking goal. And then I couldn't believe that he'd actually saved it and it was just gone. I'm like, we've literally just cheated death there. Unbelievable. Like, yeah, I know we say it every week, but like, just so lucky to have that guy. He's saved us so many goals. I'd love to see like the XG on like his saves. There's been some like just definite goal moments where I don't know how he's gotten to it. And that was a huge moment as well, because that would have been 2-1 going 2-1 down going into half time. Would have been a different game altogether coming out. So yeah, Vicario probably not getting a man of the match shout for too many people, but I think he's deserving to be in the conversation.
I think I'm right in saying this, that Chris Wood has like the highest conversion rate of any player in the Premier League this year as well. That's like one of his first misses of the season. So there you go. That's how good it was.
Yeah, he's actually like 8 and 9 or whatever. He's on some crazy. Right, I actually think because Vicario's saves have been so good, he's like, I've got to have to level this to get this past him. And he hit it too hard and hit the post. I think it's Vic that puts him off. Because, yeah, it's just every time your heart sinks and then it just like picks itself back up again because he's like, oh God, he's pulled a save out of nowhere. But yeah, I would like him to do less work. But yeah, thank God. Paratici again, wherever you are. Fantastic signing. Thank you very much.
Genuinely, where are you? But thank you. Thank you and God bless. I thought Romero had a couple of dodgy moments, actually. But I am happy to talk about how amazing he is, because I said to you, Sam, last week, and I didn't get to chat to you about it on the pod, but I said to you after the Luton game, like, I was just like, I'm fully back in love with him now. I think he's just like, that's a ridiculous thing to say. Like, what, where are we now? Like, nearly 3 years into like the Romero experience. But he's just magnificent. What an experience. But also, I'm like, loads of people around me get frustrated when he holds onto the ball and they think he's slowing the game down. And like, you and I are in agreement that he's not doing it. He's just waiting to make the right pass.
I just think it's insane that people sort of shouted him from the stands like this World Cup winner is a child and he's trying to make decisions and can't work out what he's trying to do. Like, it's just madness that people think that that's what's happening.
Yeah, they're like, obviously he's doing something. Wait, he's going to be really good.
Very, very good footballer. One of the best on earth.
He's just magnificent to watch, man. He's like, I know Mickey is sort of more thrilling, obviously, in that kind of very like visceral way. But there's something about Romero. He's just, his control is so good. He's so elegant. He's kind of like Bentancur, but just in central defense, I think.
Yeah, big time. Big time. Yeah. Just like so much finesse.
Yeah, and he's controlling that aggression in a way that because he's no longer really picking up the cards as well. I think maybe that's what we've lost in terms of, because he's controlling that, he's not flattering someone or going through somebody to win the ball. He's just making a simple tackle, or he's winning the headers or whatever he is. And I agree. I just think people that I just, sometimes when I hear comments like that about, oh, you know, he can't make a decision, I'm like, do you even watch the game? Like, you can literally see him scanning, thinking, where's the right pass? And he, 9 times out of 10, he executes the pass. So I just think, oh, God, like, people just need to cut our players some slack. We just love to complain. But, yeah, he's fantastic. And, yeah, I do think probably, in my opinion, the best centre-back pairings, plural, they're in North London. We just need more clean sheets for people to talk about our ones.
So.
Also, I absolutely love his post-game tweets always, because he always has two phrases. So yesterday he said, great game, great second half. This is his first favorite, which is my favorite, just because the Mandalorian.
Always
favorite.
Together.
Surely there are things to improve, but this is the way. So he always gets the Mandalorian quote. And then he always ends the tweets with always together until the end, or always together, which is just like,
it's amazing. So nice.
He's proper.
It's going to be on the tattoo.
Yeah, it must be the Spanish translation. Daniel. Yeah. Sign off.
I think it's also nice to see that, he's no longer taking his aggression out on the opposition, but his own teammates now when they score goals.
I've never seen somebody love it so violently. Yeah,
he like punches Mickey in the back so hard after that goal. I'm surprised it didn't like suck the wind out of him. I'd love to see it. More of that.
Mm-hmm. Billy, do you think he actually is quoting The Mandalorian?
I really hope so.
I really do too.
It's probably like a big enough cultural phenomenon that he's probably seen it, right? So
yeah.
I really hope so.
We're gonna need another one of those videos, basically.
Another favorite side Romero thing is his son on Instagram, who he always posts, like he's just like the spitting image of Romero. Like he's so unbelievably similar to him, and I love it as well.
Very, very cute. Before we move on, does anyone have any last shouts for good things, bad things, just things they want to get off their chest, little things they noticed?
I just want to say, like 43rd time lucky Porro scored a Premier League goal finally, which has been long coming.
So
I think this is his 43rd shot of the season. That's the first goal of the Premier League season. But yeah, there's another great goal. And someone on Twitter posted his goal catalogue for us, and they have all absolute bangers.
Yeah.
He's got 6 goals, and every single one of them is brilliant. So yeah.
Scores Galatz, though.
He does not score any tap-ins, that guy.
And also, that was on his mother's birthday, I believe.
Yes.
So really saved it for a special occasion.
A lovely little nod from Bentancur as well, to a little assist.
Very true, very true.
That was a lovely, lovely little flick on. That's like proper Brexit football. Love to see that. Getting to that near post and flicking it on. Unreal.
And the way that Bentancur like celebrated, like in front of the stand before he went across. Yeah. I would also say shout out to Pedro as well for his celebrations. He just, like the same way like Romero would go and punch someone, like, the way he screams, like he lets out all of his emotions, like he proper loves it. And yeah, anybody that will point to the badge gets votes from me, so thank you.
It's very simple. Nice, they should just all do it. It's really easy. And it wins us over every time. Oh, do we want to have a quick Madison Yates bit of nonsense? Yates, I'd forgotten, he was really terrible in the reverse fixture when they all committed about 100 fouls each, and then we ended up getting Bissouma sent off, and he was kind of up to similar tricks again, and in the end Madison got annoyed with him and sort of gently tapped him in the stomach and he collapsed to the ground and nothing happened and we all laughed. Obviously a bit silly by Mads, but do we care?
I hate this modern football thing, like the Ben Whiteification of modern football, where he obviously just like completely play acted and fell over. Like, there's no way that amount of contact would knock you over. It's just ridiculous. But also, you just can't be doing things like that with VAR. Like, you just can't be. Like, it's just 9 times out of 10 that's going to be a red card. We got really lucky on that one. And then also, like, he should have been sent off for doing this stupid signal for VAR. It's like, it's just a mess, isn't it? Every week there's something to talk about, which is just like,
it's exhausting.
It's exhausting. I'd want to just go back to the way we were, where we just had the odd referee mistake every game. It's not like, you know, this insane level of granular detail everything is in now. It's just tiring.
I would pay double my season ticket price if it meant that there was no VAR next season.
Yeah.
And like, oh my God, Sam, I think you might have solved it. Like, yeah, genuinely, exactly. If you offer that as a solution, the Premier League will take it.
I think someone would actually kill me.
These championship limbs, where you see the championship limbs,
mm-hmm.
and they're slightly elevated because they know that it's not going to be ruled out. I mean, any time a goal goes in, you're like, is it actually going to still count? Or is it like, you saw that fucking the Rangers Celtic game, which is one of the most insane games I've ever seen. Like, the absolute scene to that second Rangers goal that then got chalked off by VAR. It's just like, that's just, what are we doing here with all this stuff? It's just getting ridiculous.
Just mad. And I mean, like, yeah, very quickly, that another Wolves goal being disallowed at the weekend as well. It's just like, there's just no way. It's just horrific. And
is it as bad as the one that they had ruled out like a couple of months ago?
They've already
been screwed over several times.
They've absolutely suffered.
Not a single West Ham player was like even claiming for it. Like, no West Ham players were even asking for it. Like, it was just, it's just getting to the point now where they're just like looking for things.
And the keeper was just never getting there. It would have been the greatest save that the world has ever seen. But apparently he was unsighted, so no goal.
Yeah, it's just frustrating because VAR didn't feel the need to upgrade, what's his name? Danilo, whatever is his challenge, even though Bissouma received a red card in a reverse fixture and
Romero.
Kuti got a red card to get, for that challenge on Enzo Fernandez. So it's just frustrating because I think it's just the lack of consistency. Like, I am an advocate for technology in sport because I do think it works in other sports. It's just the lack of consistency. And on Maddison, for me, this is turning into a little repeat pattern, like with Brentford and Mopay, and just focus on the game. Give me my assists. Give me my goals. Let's stop fighting with the opposition and let's focus on the game plan, please. That's my kind of two pence, because he's lucky. And, you know, on another day, he could have been sent off for that.
He's very frustrated. He's frustrated with his own form, I think, isn't he?
Yeah. Channel it into fixing the form instead of fighting the opposition, please.
I do know,
but also he doesn't get any protection either, to be fair.
I mean, this is the thing. He also, what happened at West Ham, like when they nearly scored, like we're just not doing anything about that. He just gets like shoved over and it's nothing, you know? So I get it. But
there's another crazy stat I saw today as well. We're far and away the most fouled team in the league.
I think he's
with one penalty.
I think Madison's the most fouled player as well in the whole league. I do know the solution, though, and Lauren is right. Like, obviously, technology and sport is a good thing, and I think we just need to hire all the AFCON refs because they were, like, unbelievable in that tournament, and there was not a single, like, VAR decision that was taken ages and wrong. So just get the AFCON refs in the Premier League. That's what we need to do.
Just not the guy that blew full-time 20 minutes early.
Legends. Or maybe get him as well.
Exactly, for the entertainment factor.
Yeah, I'm down with that. When we're literally just going blow up ref, and he's like, sure, why not?
It's a really weird application of it that I think is the major problem, because it wasn't like the World Cup either. It's just like the way that we do it is ridiculous.
It's true. They had it at the World Cup. It was perfect, right? Yeah.
Exactly. It's just the incompetent people, the PGMOL or whatever they call themselves. They're shite. That's
whatever
summary.
They call themselves, if that is in fact your name. I've got one last little thing to say, actually, that I just remembered, which is just please leave Kulu alone, everybody. I feel like his confidence has gone to pieces, and we've already done it with Brennan. He's only a year older than Brennan. Let's just chill.
Yeah, and I think what we need to remember is that while a lot of our players are injured, Kulusevski was carrying our team for a lot of games. So plenty of credit in the bank for that guy. And just read that interview if you're frustrated with him. Just fall in love with him again. Also get his sister on the coaching team.
Exactly. Just going to say, come on, Sandra.
For the fans.
Is it? Yeah.
I think it's Sandra.
Yeah. All right. We can't hide away from it any longer, guys. We have to go back to St. James's Park. I think I switched off last season when we were 3-0 down, probably. I don't know if any of the rest of you watched any more of that vintage humiliation.
Yeah.
But how are we all feeling, Billy?
Yeah, so with that game, I didn't watch it, luckily, because I was out. But vividly remember being at my friend's house visiting their baby, and I was at the foot of their stairs and it was 1-0 down. And by the time I got to the top of the stairs, it was 3-0. I was like, what the hell is going on? And then I just turned my phone off after that. I'm not even gonna...
But we're done here. Yeah,
but I think it's a very different Newcastle team this season. They've not been anywhere near as good. They have some really good players that can harm us, that can harm any team. They've got Gordon, Isak, and Bruno Guimarães, who I think are three incredible players. I would take every single one of them right now at Tottenham. But they just got an insane amount of injuries still. Like, they get every single game, they're getting check players not chopped down. I think they've got like no centre back. So I think it'll be a completely different proposition. And I hope that we can win, or I hope that we can at least not lose, and certainly not lose 5-0 or whatever it was, 5-1.
Sam, do you think we're going to have our revenge?
I hope so. I'm making the trip up there, so that either, it's going to go one way or the other, isn't it? But I'm feeling optimistic. I think, there's a lot of fresh faces in this team. I don't think there's going to be too much PTSD in that starting 11. fingers crossed.
Yeah, who even? I guess Porro, wasn't that Porro's like first adventure as a right back, I believe.
I think so.
Something like that. Because it was Stellini switched the formation to four at the back. So
he may be a bit, you know, we'd forgive some wobbles. But other than that, it's like all the rest of them are just whatever. Bentancur didn't play. He was
just
injured.
The fans.
Yeah.
Just us, as ever. Yeah.
It's just us. I just remember that it was that bad that I was actually getting condolences like in the group chats rather than just Yeah. Like it was that bad. And I just think, do you know what? The bar is in hell. It cannot be worse. So, yeah, whatever. I do think, that they're not the same team. We're a better team. Who knows?
I'm just on their injury list. So their injury list is Botman, Lascelles, Tonali is obviously suspended, Miley, Wilson, Joe Linton, Livramento, Almiron, Pope, Trippier, Willock and Target all injured for this game, which is insane, really, right? Like, if we're never going to get a better chance to win there than that.
Yeah, and their injury rate is every time they play someone new does get injured. So one of the starters that starts will probably go off injured as well. Yeah, I think they have got the threat on the counter-attack. But I just think with St. James's Park, you have to quiet down that crowd. So you've got to start well. We need calm heads. So hopefully Ange makes the changes. Maybe we do see Højbjerg and Bentancur in from the start. And if it doesn't work out, it cannot be as bad as last season. So like I said, my expectations are rock bottom. The club embarrassed me last year. So, you know, it is what it is. Good luck. Sam's travelling. So obviously I would really hope it's not a wasted 4-hour trip each way for you. But can't get worse.
Yeah,
thanks, mate.
Words to live by. Would you guys make any changes very quickly? So, Lauren, would you start Højbjerg and Bentancur, or Højbjerg?
Yeah, both of them. That would be my midfield.
Okay.
Changes.
Would you make any changes up top? Because I think Richie will be back.
Yes, but no, because I do think Newcastle play a high line. So in terms of that pacing behind, for me, that would be the preferred strategy rather than someone to hold the ball up, because they probably are going to be playing with centre-backs who are not centre-backs. So I'd rather see Son stretch the line and then Werner and Brennan on either side.
Billy?
Look at Timo's in my starting lineup. God,
yes.
There she comes.
I'm so torn.
Get the money out.
I don't think Ange will make any changes. I don't think he'll play Højbjerg and Bentancur. I think he'll start with the same team. I just feel like Højbjerg in particular is much better sub than he is a starter. When he starts games, he's not particularly effective, but when he comes on, he's really, really good. And the only question mark is Sarr or Bentancur. Who'd you go for out of those two? So I think that's the only change we might see, which I think is unlucky because Bissouma has not been playing well for quite a long stretch of games now. But Ange just doesn't seem to want to change it. I think he'll start him again.
I do think the tempo is off when Højbjerg starts. I'm wondering now if we've sort of evolved enough that wouldn't be the case.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just don't know.
And I think we really missed Richarlison against Forest, but I think Lauren's completely right. Son is the profile you want against Newcastle. And Richie's probably the one who'd play against Forest, which we missed him yesterday.
Sam, it's interesting that agree with Billy that I don't think he'll make any drastic changes. It's interesting that there's, correct me if I'm wrong here, but like when he's made those early halftime changes, it's like always worked.
Yeah,
I think so.
And I think like the frustration has come when the changes have come too late. Like I felt like the changes came way too late against West Ham, and like I was begging for a halftime change against West Ham. Be interesting to see that maybe he will try and do that a bit more now to just try and 45 minutes.
Right? Johnson was a halftime change, right, against Luton? Yeah, I think it was a halftime one. So that's our last two home games have both been impacted by halftime changes.
I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it. And it doesn't count towards your three changes. Three changes as well if you make it a halftime as well, right? So.
Oh, does it not? Okay.
Yeah, it's not a change window.
Not a bad for a manager that doesn't have a plan B.
I can't wait. Do you know what I think we need to do at the end of the season? Is we need to take all of the like nonsense bullshit that people have said about Ange over the season and just be like, puncture it one by one. I think it's going to be really, really good fun, no matter where we end up.
I have a friend that is perfect for that job. She'll like create a PDF of just like hundreds of tweets. And it'll be like a really high res PDF that you can sort of just zoom in, and it'll be like a tweet. It might be a little picture, a little meme. She's excellent. But I'll get her on the case. Yeah.
She's committed already, I'm afraid. So
it's done. She's in.
It's out there. It's happening.
We should do that when we finish top four, but that would go against our manager, really, wouldn't it? He does not care. Just wherever we finish, let's just do it.
He literally can't waste
James Madison. James Madison bus.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, but then he needs to get, as you said, Lauren, then he needs to work hard to get us there. Right. I have got a little quiz for you guys. Kicking off with the one, the only, the original Ozzy Ardiles, Spurs legend. Infamously managed Spurs and Newcastle, but which other pair of English clubs did he manage? Was it Coventry City and Northampton Town, Bristol City and Plymouth Argyle, Reading and Tranmere Rovers, or Swindon Town and West Brom? Sam, I'm going to ask you first.
I'm absolutely stumped. I'm going to go for B.
Bristol City and Plymouth Argyle. Okay. Billy?
Lock it in.
I feel like I really should know this, but I don't. So I'm going to go with the first two that you said, A.
Coventry City and Northampton Town.
I really should know that, but none of them jump out at all. None of the eight clubs.
Lauren? Yes, yeah, it's unfair for Lauren and Sam, actually, but...
yeah, same for me, but I was going to say B, but I'm going to be different. I'll go C.
Reading and Tranmere Rovers. My loves, you're all wrong. It was Swindon Town and West Brom. I think we actually got him from West Brom. I'm relatively reliably informed. But yeah, I didn't know either. I was also like,
I really should
he managed before us.
Ollie's
going to be so happy with himself.
Yeah, sorry to our Aussie RDS specialists who may be listening and we've let you down.
But I'm like, he just doesn't belong to any other club. He's one of those people where, like, nothing... There was Argentina, obviously. And then after that, like, nothing happened that wasn't Tottenham.
A couple of people with Martin Yol that have managed West Brom and Tottenham. That's obviously...
Very true, yeah.
There's probably more as well.
Yeah, that'd be... I'll save that for,
come up.
The big hometown glory quiz that we will eventually do at some point. Right, moving on to another Spurs, and I guess Newcastle legend, Gazza. He played 92 league games for both Tottenham and Newcastle, but what transfer fee did he agree with Lazio when we sadly sold him? Was it 5.5 million, 1.4 million, 3.8 million, or 2.6 million? Lauren, I'll start with you.
God. 1.4, I'm going to go low.
Does anyone remember what year this was? I've literally forgotten already. I should have written it down.
No, sorry, I'm playing the age card once again.
Yeah, I'm a disgrace to myself. This is actually before my time as well, I'm pretty sure. But I should still know it. Billy?
I want to say that it was in either 1991 or 1992, which is before my time, but I think I'm going to go 5.5 million.
Sam?
I was also going to say 5.5.
You are both correct. It's 5.5. Which,
oh God, I was like,
that doesn't sound like a lot of money, but apparently, again, it must have been like 92 because obviously we won the FA Cup in 91. So, but in night, when Shearer was sold in 97 or something, he went for like 7.5 million. So that's actually a lot of money. So it's really good that we obviously like kicked on from there. We invested our money wisely.
Did he like win the FA Cup and then go, pretty much, I guess.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah. Maybe we got like another year, but
as all of our players can, if they do win the FA Cup, please do that.
So team
you have to stay until you win the FA Cup. That should be a rule, basically.
Very good. Timo Werner is worth double Alan Shearer.
There you go.
I mean, that's listen, I'm fine with that. Today's money, yesterday's money, doesn't matter.
And also around about the £5 million mark was our offer for Galatasaray to take Tanguy and Ndombele, which, yeah, our record signing, they refused.
Yeah.
£200,000 a week to pay again.
As I've said to you guys, I honestly misread that at the beginning as we'd offered them him and 5 million, which genuinely makes more sense to me. And I think they should do it. I think they should do it. It's really sad, isn't it? We're just going to, anyway, we'll just make Lauren sad again. We'll all be depressed.
Yeah, I'll try this summer to not think he's going to reinvent himself. I think
challenge.
I'll try my best. Yeah, I'll try my best.
But it is your last chance, so.
Yeah. Another slow, painful preseason.
It is just one more year, right?
Yeah, I think
Be it's not two, is it?
It's a six-year deal.
It was a six-year deal. It must be six-year. This is 5 years, surely.
It was 2019.
Oh, dear. Well, yeah.
Almost there.
One of these days, someone will probably write a book on, like, the mystery of Tanguy and Ndombele and, like, what it means for football or whatever. And none of us will read it, except you, Lauren, I imagine.
I was going to say it would need to be an autobiography to keep himself relevant. But he's actually earned really well.
Yeah, he's done fine. He's had a great life.
But yeah, I will read it.
Yeah, we shouldn't feel too sorry.
Trophy winner at the weekend, by the way. So there you go.
Was he actually like? Does he get a medal?
That was the under-19s.
Turkish Super Cup final. You have to look at it because it's mad. It's absolutely mad. But
hang on a second. Does that mean my guy Dav is a trophy winner?
It does. Yeah. Insane circumstances.
I feel so proud.
Turkish, we should have a side podcast just about Turkish football because it is insane. But basically, Fenerbahce refused to play because of the way that they've been treated by the Turkish FA. So Galatasaray scored one goal, then Fenerbahce walked off, and Galatasaray then won, and then they just played a match between themselves so the fans could see something. So,
and it was the Fenerbahce under-19 team. They didn't play their senior team. They played all their youth players.
Best trophy ever.
Incredible.
That's a proper protest. Yeah. Like Tottenham could have a good look at that.
No, we're gonna see a tweet somewhere that Davinson Sanchez won a trophy before Harry Kane.
Yeah, please don't. That's not joke
too much. I'm gonna tweet it. I don't care.
And if you're listening, do not.
If you get to the cup final, please don't play our under-19. In fact, I would love to be on the other end that we get to play someone's under-19s who've been like Everton or someone that is protesting. That'd be a great first win for us.
Would it be a win? Let's be real.
It would.
All right. Dude, I appreciate the belief. I've got one more question for you guys. You can't escape it because it is about one of the most infamous days in our history. The final day of the 2015-2016 season, we completed another vintage embarrassment by losing to 10-man Newcastle 5-1. But who scored for Spurs? And who was sent off for Newcastle that day? Son and Sissoko. For a minute, I thought Ollie had written that down wrong, but I remembered he was actually playing for Newcastle at that point. Kane and Wijnaldum. Mason and Tiote. Lamella and Mitrovic. Billy.
I know the answer to that because I was there, and it was one of the worst days of my life, but also one of the best because Newcastle is incredible. Had an amazing weekend leading up to that. Horrific result, and Lamella scored for us, pretty sure. And then Mitrovic, and then Sissoko scored against us. Yeah,
did Sissoko also score? Oh, God's sake.
I think he might have even scored twice,
of course. And then, like, basically didn't ever do it. No, actually, I think Sissoko did all right for us. I'll defend him for us. But I genuinely occasionally do forget that he played for us. Okay, that is correct. There are no other answers. It is. I said this was too easy. I didn't know that. I've got no memory of if you'd asked me who got sent off for them, I wouldn't have been able to tell you. But I know it was Lamella who scored because literally, like, who else could it be?
Yeah, and that was just. We finished below Arsenal on that specific day as well.
We did.
It was just
that was a do not disturb on the phone.
That was when we hadn't finished with them in like 20 years by that point as well. So it was just
We needed 2 points
against a relegated Newcastle.
We needed 2 points from our final two games.
Yeah,
and we lost at home against Southampton the week before, and then it was like, okay, fine, surely,
10 men.
Exactly, 10 men already relegated Newcastle, and it's like, you can't just lose, can you? That's the thing. When you're Tottenham, other teams would just go down like 1-0 and it'd be like, whatever, that's embarrassing. But we really have to make it count, don't we?
Yeah, what you're saying,
most
before,
teams
Lauren,
would drink of the fans.
if we're talking about this weekend's game in 10 years' time, we would have had to have really fucked it up.
Or done something incredible.
Yeah.
No, there's no that you can't do anything that incredible. Yeah, it would have to be absolutely historic. Okay, everyone, just send out your prayers.
Wijnaldum scored twice. Yeah, not so. So Aaron Mitrovic scored as well, and then Daryl Janmaat.
Oh God! I mean, that's not the thing about that. Is like they shouldn't have been relegated anyway. That's not actually a terrible Newcastle team.
Andros Townsend was playing for Newcastle that day. Well,
oh yeah.
He threw it on both sides of the pitch for time.
Moving on, let's put that back in the dustbin of history where it belongs until the next time we need to take it out and traumatize ourselves. Culture. Oh, actually, before we move on to culture, just a quick announcement, I guess. It is the Women's FA Cup semi-final on Sunday, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, midday. Lauren and I are going to be recording a preview special with friend of the pod, Caroline. That'll be out later this week. But this is another reminder to get your tickets, come and support the team. It's our best chance of anything literally ever. It's going to be an amazing day and we could genuinely do it. So let's all be there to see it. Sam, talk to me about what you've been up to.
I have just started Peaky Blinders, which like years and years too late, but so one of those shows that I finally got around to watching, and yeah, finished the first season tonight, enjoyed it, it's really good, and yeah, looking forward to seeing how that pans out. Don't think I'm going to start wearing a flat cap anytime soon, but yeah, enjoying it.
I never watched it. Lauren, you were nodding.
Yeah, it's a great program, and to be fair, I watched it when it actually came out, and that flat cap era was really hilarious to see so many people wearing those flat caps and a lot of head shapes that didn't suit flat caps. But yeah, it's a really good show. I think it's kind of peak British TV drama era. So yeah, I am glad you're enjoying. I will not spoil anything, but lots of ups and downs, but it's a decent program.
Yeah, and like thoroughly enjoying it, so looking forward to chatting it out with you. And then yeah, I don't think there's been lots of football on this week, so I've been absorbed by that.
So much football, man. Like even now, I watched the Old Firm, like caught a little bit of one of my friends is an Ipswich fan, and he was obviously, he's been like delighted with what's been happening this season and then really devastated. But I don't think Ipswich have beaten Norwich in like since like 2009 or something.
Madison himself tweeted it's been like 20 years or something.
Oh, brutal.
Oh yeah, the East Anglia derby.
Can I ask on the football front, what people are going to do tomorrow night? Are you going to watch Man City, Real Madrid or Bayern Munich, Arsenal? Because I really want to watch both of those games and I'm annoyed that they're all at the same time.
I'm going to do City, Madrid because I can't watch same. Arsenal. Like, same. Yeah.
I would do both. I will watch one on the telly and stream the other. I've got to do my hate watch. Sorry. I need Harry Kane to score a hat trick, so I will physically try to send him my motivation through the screen.
Okay, I'm going to send it via you then because I can't. It's just too stressful. Like, yeah. Like, as it is, the thought of playing them in a couple of weeks is already giving me nightmares. So I need to be sort of not involved in whatever's going on with them for as long as possible. Billy, what's going on with you?
So I think last time I was on, I said I was about to start the three-body problem. I've now finished it, and it's one of the best.
Literally like 2 weeks ago.
I was like, oh man, I absolutely loved every second of it. It's just really, really good. I really, really enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed watching it and like obsessing over it, of like the all the science of it. I'm gonna buy the books now as well. Yeah, really, really enjoyed it. I know that you're watching it as well. What episode are you on?
We've just finished episode 3.
Oh, nice.
Yes, we're very into it. The only thing that I'd say that has surprised me is it seems to be like speeding through loads of plot. Like I thought it would be really more of like a mystery box show, but actually it's just like, oh, this thing that you thought was going to happen is happening already.
Yeah, and there's a couple of good episodes on the watch on that when they're like talking about how good the Games of Thrones guys are at doing that. Like it's like a bit like Dune, where they've got like these insanely, what people thought were unfilmable books, so they're just like, no, we're just going to do it and just go through the plot really quickly. And I was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, because it seemed like, because I wanted to listen to one to the Watch podcast on it, but they did like the first 5 episodes, didn't they? Yeah. In like a chunk, so that's annoying.
If you watch the fifth episode, firstly, the fifth episode is incredible. It's like a natural pause in the story, so I would recommend listening to that when you've watched the fifth episode, because it's a good little discussion. Okay. And then they do the last 3 as well, which is really good too. And I also watched Monkey Man today, which was fucking brilliant, and which is Dev Patel's debut film, and it was insanely violent. A lot of people have said it's like John Wick, but I think it gives it a bit of a disservice. I love John Wick, but it's a bit more like, it's got a bit more of a bit more backbone to it and a bit more meat in the bones, because it goes into a lot of like Indian culture and Indian class system. It has a lot to say about India, so I thought it was really, really good. Really loved it. And I just think he's an insanely, I can't believe it's his first film that he's ever directed, because it just looks incredible.
He's a very talented dude. Is it not a sort of riff on Rama?
Monkey Man itself is comes from like a Hindu story. I was listening to a couple of interviews about it. From a Hindu story. Yeah, it does come from, it comes from a traditional Hindu story that he read when he was a kid. And that is actually in the film as well.
Yeah.
And then
that really piqued my interest, because I love that sort of thing when people have their own takes on mythological.
And it is obviously like, it is the John Wick story, like of revenge. And it even mentions John Wick in the film as like a nod, but it's really, really good, as is John Wick.
Very exciting. Lauren, what about you?
So my watching has been quite football themed. So I watched Man City's treble winning documentary. I love me a Netflix sport doc, so I will watch.
Even when it's a team you hate?
I just love seeing what goes on.
I really enjoyed the way you mumbled that. Amazing.
Yeah, I was just like, but yeah, like I think it was, yeah, I just love them. Like, even if it's a sport I don't particularly watch much of, I do just really enjoy watching sport documentaries. My favourite bit was that we really live in Pep's head rent-free. Like when he was talking about the kind of the Champions League experience, the moment that he goes back to is us knocking them out in the quarterfinals rather than losing to Chelsea. That came second in the final. So yeah, I really kind of enjoyed that.
I knew it. I knew that was the real trophy. Yes.
Yeah, one of the episodes. But yeah, it's just fascinating, I think, to you get a lot of insight into the dressing room and whatnot. So for football lovers, you'll enjoy it.
How does he generally come across from it, would you say?
Do you know, I actually think he's a really good motivational speaker. And actually, he talks about, one of the things I found most fascinating is he spoke about his halftime speech in the Champions League final against Chelsea, where he said in hindsight he was a bit too aggressive with the players and a bit too demanding, whereas the Champions League final in Istanbul, he was very much, I'm going to be calm, I'm going to just give the instructions. And I think he's kind of, you can see him trying to improve himself as a coach that's won everything, and he's still trying to kind of develop himself. But then I also, it did make me think of Ange and think he's already got that just innate within him, and that like level of calmness, and actually that's what you need to translate. And also Robert then obviously talking about it as well with the women's team, being like, you know, sometimes they get mistaken for doing nothing or not, you know, showing passion. Like obviously we've just come from Conte, who we had Conte cam because, you know, he's jumping up and down all over the place, but actually calmness in the dressing room and how to settle your players down to focus on the game plan. But yeah, he comes across quite well.
That sounds really good. And I need him to also be focusing on improving right now, please, Pep.
Yeah.
That'd be really good if you could manage that. Just pick it up a little bit. Thank you. Lovely stuff, everyone. Yeah, I don't really have anything to add except three body problem as discussed. I'm excited to crack on with the next couple of episodes specifically, and we'll catch up with that later. Thanks so much, guys. Lovely to chat with you all as always. Billy, will you see us out?
Up the Spurs.